members of this parliament. In this joint committee, we will be hearing Violeta Bilk, the commissioner in charge of transports. So the European Affairs Commission and the Commission for Economy, with the President Helder Amaral, who has just come into the room, and our colleague Jean-Paul Correa will also be coming. But the President of the Committee, Economy Commission, has just arrived, whom I welcome. We also wish to welcome Commissioner Violeta Bilk, who, in spite of her very busy agenda, you know, meetings with the government, is today with us. As you very well know, we only have 1 hour with her. So she will be beginning with 15 minutes of presentation and then 15 more minutes for the members of the parliamentary groups represented here in this commission to address the commissioner, and then an additional 15 minutes to Commissioner Bilk to answer the question. Thank you very much. I give you the floor, Commissioner.
Boa tarde, Senhora Presidente, Senhores Degustados. I'm very thankful for having a chance to address you and to talk to you about one of most exciting portfolios and the portfolio that helps to deliver the European agenda in a large scale. And as President Juncker said, winds are back to our sails, and I really feel that way. Even here, after 2 days spending with your representatives of your government, with citizens, with representatives of different industries, I think I can feel it here as well in Portugal. And let me say that Portugal continues to make a good progress with growth having reached an estimated 2.7% in 2017. It is now time to accelerate reforms addressing the many challenges which we remain confronted to. And you're not the only ones. Every member state has one or two challenges that they need to confront and that they need to work on in a very focused way. And that applies to Portugal too. I do believe that 2018 is the year of a delivery, especially for the Commission. We are now moving to the second part of our mandate, and with everything we worked on in the first 3 years, we now want to see the delivery of it and, of course, the engagement on European in the European Union. So we really need member states, parliaments, not only on the EU level, but also on a national level, to be engaged, to be focused, and to help us to bring home the legislations that are absolutely necessary in order to continue to develop the story of the European Union. So please make sure that you are at the table when we negotiate new legislation, standards, and investment plans, because now it's time to engage. Now we are getting ready for 2026 period. So I really hope to see you very active on European podium as well. But let me now focus on transport. And there are many things happening and many things that are important for Portugal as well. And I would like to start with the investments. My dear ladies and gentlemen, Portugal showed a high level of ambition for transport infrastructure development in light of its request for CEF funding. The Portuguese portfolio is composed today of 42 projects selected under 2014 and 2020, 2016, sorry, calls and receiving almost 680 million euros of co-funding for total investment worth 1.2 billion. These are huge projects and very decent amount for a country of this size. In other words, Portugal has been able to absorb in 3 years the total envelope, co-funding available in its national cohesion envelope. And it obtained an additional 128 million of co-funding for an important rail project under the general envelope, which was at a 50% of co-funding rate. So most of these projects should be completed between 2019 and 2020. And the capacity of Portugal to implement projects on schedule and with the necessary national co-funding has improved compared to 2007 and 2013, when the country was suffering from the financial crisis. Portugal is collaborating well now with the Commission, in particular on the implementation of the Atlantic Core Network Corridor. Excuse me. This is essential, as you know. The question of the next MFF, multi-annual financial framework, is now up to, for the discussion. And it is an important moment when we need to ensure that EU co-funding in infrastructure projects, and especially transport projects, will continue also in the next period. But we know that EU budget will be under a severe pressure for various different reasons. Being new budget lines, refugees, defence, Brexit, all that will have an impact, and we're looking for a new ways forward and what kind of changes we need to make in order to deliver an efficient budget for 2026 period. Let's explore now together a little bit the market and social issues. The transport sector is facing a number of unprecedented challenges related to social and market access issues, specifically in the road transport sector. The road haulage market is of a critical importance to the competitiveness of the European economy, and it is vital for Portuguese businesses. I'm fully aware of that. So that they can get their goods to a market of over 500 million people. I have to say that currently we are in quite a messy situation. We have regulatory frameworks that member states don't use. We have excessive use and interpretation of those laws. EU Commission really, together with Member States, Parliament, and, of course, all stakeholders, decided to make a step further, because the status quo is simply not an option. This is loud and clear. So let's see what are now the changes that we are foreseeing and which are the legislative proposals in the pipeline that we are currently negotiating on. First, the Commission wants to ensure the transport operators compete on the same footing. We therefore issued proposals to fight letterbox companies. Transport undertakings must be legally established in the Member States from where they effectively and continuously manage their operations. This is our proposal. And national authorities must better cooperate to detect fraud and stop illegal practices. For that, we were very concrete in our proposals, how and where this should be controlled and managed. At times where enforcement capacity in member states are being reduced, it is also especially important to have good tools, including digital tools, and close cooperation between member states. This is also part of our proposal. At this point, it's worth saying that we're proposing four different layers of digitalization to really cut all the administrative burdens on a level of operations and reporting of the status of the operations directly to the member states' databases, digital tachographs to monitor better the behavior of drivers, and country-to-country exchange of information in a digital format, the same way as we use now IRRU database for the exchange of traffic valuation, and that proved to be very successful, so we are planning to address the social issues through that as well. We also want to bring fairness for workers, in particular for drivers. Our objective is to ensure an effective and proportionate application of minimum wage laws, so that a Portuguese driver spending his or her time in Germany, for example, is paid enough to be able to cope with the local cost of living. The fact that workers are highly mobile is not a reason to exclude them and deprive them from the benefit of EU legislation. At the same time, this should be done with a limited administrative burden for operations, but also considering the specific characteristic of transport at the same time, for example, for international transport delivery, where we propose the exceptions. We also want to make clear that drivers must take their regular weekly rest outside of the cabin in decent condition and return home on a regular basis. We now have to work to complete the negotiations, finding a way to accommodate the concerns expressed and worked constructively on an agreement between Member States, Parliament and the Commission. That brings me to the third topic, transport sustainability and decarbonisation. Besides those challenges, we need to deal with the question of sustainability. Road transport alone accounts for almost one-fifth of the EU greenhouse gas emissions. Transport altogether, 24%. And out of that, 73% comes from road. Growing demand increases the sustainability challenge, of course. Passenger transport is expected to grow by about 42% by 2050, with freight growing by 60% by 2050. So we need to really seriously, in a systemic way and system way, tackle these challenges. That's why we propose the use of distance-based charging system for both heavy and light vehicles. Such system better reflects the user pay and polluter pay principle than time-based system, and they also provide for a more transparent and sustainable financing for road infrastructure. In other words, we would like to bring clarity and transparency to how the transport infrastructure has been financed, and we want to make sure that the citizens and taxpayers don't pay it twice. Right now it's covered through taxes, and we want to make sure that this is done as earmarking and through the, as I said before, user and polluter-based principle. I must stress that with the adoption of our proposal, Portugal, like all member states, would remain free to introduce or not road charging on all or part of its territory. But if this will be done, we propose to be done in a digital and standardized way throughout the entire EU. Other proposals adopted in November under the second mobility package aim at increasing the efficiency of our transport system, stimulating the development of a long-distance bus and coach connections for passengers, and providing additional incentives to transport operators to shift long-distance freight from road to rail, inland waterways, or short sea shipping. That's why we are also co-funding a transition to alternative sources of energy, so alternative infrastructure, and co-funding transshipment centers where the interoperability and multimodality can take place. Accelerating the deployment of clean vehicles with new CO2 emission standards for cars and vans for 2020-2030 period, and making it easier for citizens and local authorities to buy clean public fleets is also a very important component of decarbonization of transport. In other words, we are proposing for member states quotas for public vehicles that each member state and public services should be front runners of decarbonization of transport and paving the way for citizens to learn from. That's why we're speeding up the deployment of alternative energy sources, as I mentioned before, for transport, mobilizing 800 million euros for this. And this is also a new opportunity for Portugal that we addressed yesterday with your officials in the government as well. The fourth topic I'd like to bring your attention to is road safety. While Portugal has managed to make great inroads in cutting the number of fatalities since 2010, 2017 is again a wake-up call. The figures, real lives lost, increased rather significantly. Therefore, I would really call on this House to exert what whatever pressure you can, so that 2018 will be a better year. And be constructive and try to find the reasons why this happened and address those issues. To support Member States, the Commission will present in its third mobility package, which is also our last legislative package, additional measures. This should include in particular a revision of our General Vehicle Safety Directive to mandate additional safety devices, which remain today only optional and reserved to the most expensive vehicles. We want to push them all the way down to every vehicle on the street, and a revision of our Road Infrastructure Safety Directive to improve the quality of our roads. In the same package, we will consider how to accompany the deployment of connected, cooperative, and autonomous vehicles and automated vehicles. I strongly believe that they can also contribute very significantly to the road safety, but also to the mobility of most vulnerable populations, such as elderly and disabled people. It is worth mentioning at the end that 93% of all accidents are caused by humans and our imperfection in our behavior, being on the first position, again, the high speed. Second is alcohol and drugs. Third is lack of using the seat belts. And fourth, which is becoming very strong, actually stronger and stronger, is a distraction in the car, the use of different social services and multimodal services in the car. So yes, we can make a difference. And it's a lot to do with human behavior. Allow me now to move to the fifth topic, which is maritime. I couldn't visit Portugal without mentioning this sector. And during the maritime year, that was 2017, we made important progress mainly aimed at providing clarity and flexibility for attracting investments to maritime, especially to ports, with the Port Service Regulation and the revised General Block Exemption Regulation that were both adopted. You know that one of them took 15 years to adopt. I would also like to praise the ports reform enacted in Portugal, which has proven to be a successful story, reviving the Portuguese economy in the aftermath of the economic crisis. We continue to support a constructive social dialogue for future job profiles, closing skills gaps, and creating long-lasting careers in ports. And here it's worth mentioning the maritime is used now as a test bed, also as part of the overall European projects of the future of skills, where we are, through the maritime sector, studying and trying to come up with a good proposal that will ensure sustainability of employment in this sector. We know that digitalization is dramatically changing the sector. Jobs are moving from the ship to the shore, and of course different skills are needed. And I'm counting on you, as being one of the strong maritime nations, to help to co-create this transition, that it can be done in a smooth way. As an integral part of the global logistic network, ports can also serve as catalysts for rapid change throughout the industry, and they have a really important role to play also in decarbonization of transport. For example, the energy revolution through the provision of shoreside power supply from renewable sources and infrastructure for alternative low and zero carbon fuels. We see now that the changes are happening throughout the entire EU. And recent initiatives around the world indicate that ports can also provide key incentives for less polluting ships. We are happy that the Port of Lisbon, with its Green Award, is one of the front runners in Europe. Let me mention at this point also that in the May package, in this last package, where the stress will be on digitalization, we are introducing also single window approach for the entire European maritime field, and also e-documents, which will finally bring digitalization to the administration of the ports. In the conclusion, allow me to restress that the road is long and it will still take time, but the vision of fully connected multimodal, integrated, zero-emission single transport area for Europe is very clear. And I really count on your support as well, but not only on support, I count on your very active co-creation of this new image, new content, and new opportunities for mobility in Europe. Obrigado.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Commissioner. Passamos agora à primeira ronda e última e única.
We will now have the first round and only round of question, and I give the floor to Member António Costa da Silva from the Socialist Democrat Party. Thank you very much, President. Members of this Parliament, a special word of greeting to the Commissioner Violeta Bulc. On behalf of the Democratic Socialist Party, I wish to welcome you to this Assembly. Your visit to Portugal comes on a very timely occasion because it coincides with a set of investments, which in our view is good news, and that have met the national consensus. For several years, even with the previous government, we had the PETI, which was the transport program, already planned for this type of infrastructures for Portugal, particularly the connection from Gaia to the Sines Porto through Spain, but several other transport routes that are very important for Portugal. We are talking about of an investment of 380 million euros with 252 million euros of EU funds. So a very important structural investment which the PSD party finds as decisive and paramount for our Portuguese competitiveness. And also, allow me to say that will reduce imbalances, ensuring the development of Portuguese ports. Sines port should be considered as the doorway, the most western doorway of deep waters, doorway to Europe that should be used from a European perspective. If we look, for example, at the new maritime routes from Panama and also from North America and even from Africa and from other parts of the world, from that perspective, this structure and the railway linkage from Sines to Europe is paramount for Portugal. So this is the beginning of a project that is very important to us. From our perspective also, we find that something should be added to this project, which is economic and social cohesion, particularly in the territorial regions. We have great many gaps, regional gaps, and this road, this railway should also serve the interland, some interior regions. This is one request that we have. But we also know that there are still some issues with the expropriation of property in these regions. So there are several challenges that we still need to work on, even at the European level. These are challenges that the EU members need to address. There is a big blockage in air traffic, in road traffic, that costs 1% of annual GDP. So it is significant. Therefore, we need to adopt measures that will address this issue. Another issue is our dependence on oil. It is paramount to develop updated, innovative, modern policies that may allow us to use new resources so that oil may no longer have the weight that it currently has on the national economies. Another very important issue is greenhouse effect gas emissions. This, for us, is something that must be in the forefront of EU policies and national policies. And then there is the quality of infrastructures, which are different from territory to territory and from country to country. So we need to generate some more greater balances between EU members in terms of the infrastructure. Portugal find that this is a very important issue. And then there is competition. And allow me to highlight some fundamental issues, which is, for example, the use of community funds. In the previous period, and the investments that were done in infrastructures, road and railway, many of those were too focused on EU funds and not through national funding. The new wave in the new program of funds suggests that it will be increasingly centralized, large EU programs to fund transnational projects. But at the level of territorial cohesion and within the regions, we need to address regional issues with sums and funds that may address territorial issues. These were issues that were ignored in the previous period, and therefore I would like to ask you if this new period addresses this issue. And finally, we have a question about the investments that have been very much focused on infrastructures, and everything that has to do with investment around infrastructures has not really had a lot of visibility, namely in terms of vehicles, for example. Thank you very much, Chairman, President, Commissioner. Thank you very much. Thank you, Member Costa da Silva, and I give the floor to Ricardo Giga from the Socialist Party. President, Commissioner, welcome. On behalf of the Socialist Party, I welcome you to this assembly, and also welcome to Portugal for sharing with us this time of this happy time that initiates a new cycle of investment in transports, and which will initiate our preparation for the Portuguese strategy plan. Allow me to highlight that the Socialist Party finds many common traits in your presentation, namely in terms of your address of the economy and competitiveness, the issues of employment, but also the importance or the role that transport industry has and can play in sustainability and the focus on people, creating more jobs, better living conditions, and guaranteeing a better future for the European citizen. I'm sure that during these days in Portugal, you've concluded that these are new times that we are living in terms of public transport policies. Allow me here, Commissioner, to say that this government inherited a very complicated situation because the previous government suspended all large investments in the transport sector in terms of infrastructures and all modernization, resource modernization projects, be they HR, infrastructures, equipment, and also disinvested largely in the public transport companies, because its main goal was to privatize public transport governments. So this government then was forced to, the current government was forced to plan large sums to recover many of these privatized companies in order to ensure that these companies deliver a quality public service in the different areas. As you very well know, all of these investments involve large sums, and most of them are long-term investments. So the previous policies of the previous government had a very serious impact on the economy. So the current government, I'm sure, presented to you a set of projects and an investment plan that is very ambitious, not only under the Portugal 2020 program, but also under Portugal 2030. These plans, these programs and projects, I'm sure you already were familiar with from the previous the 2020 transport plan, but let me highlight some of them. The integration of Portugal in the trans-European transport network, in particular the railway route. And yesterday you had the opportunity of attending the launch of one of the large works of this project, but also investment in airport transportation. On the other hand, the need to resolve some of the big bottlenecks of air transportation, namely the Lisbon airport, and the need to expand the Porto airport. But our concern is not only Portugal, because we see the Portuguese platform as a space where from here Europe can develop its, conduct its economic activities with a view to Latin America and North America. And it will only be possible if Portugal is integrated in the large transport network, and if it participates in alongside the EU members, other EU members, in responding to the big economic challenges. And then allow me to address the topic of the smart cities. This government has already presented a ambitious plan for new forms of sustainable and smart movement. Smart transportation. And then on the other hand, the issues related to the need to close the circle of intermodality and to have all of these forms of transport operating as a whole, which entails investment in innovation. Now, these are the questions I have to address to you, Commissioner. In face of this government's ambitious plan, which I know has the support of the Commissioner, how can we address the constraints and limitations of the Juncker plan, which focuses essentially on investments through financial investment and not other forms of investment, no return payment investment. And then there is the question about your views on the visit in face of all of the plans and the projects that you had the opportunity to see and to discuss with the Portuguese government. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ricardo Pacheco and Ricardo Heitor de Sousa from the BE party, left bloc party. Thank you very much. Allow me to begin by greeting the Commissioner. Welcome to Portugal, Commissioner Bulk. And let me take this opportunity to understand better to what extent the strategy for the company for the 2020-2030 decade can be leveraged by a correct mobility and transport policy at the European level. Because, Commissioner, what has been going on in Portugal in terms of transport and the priorities for transport when we look at the past 30 years of community funds has been to focus on a transport and a mobility policy that leads to increasing carbonization and not decarbonization, which is the goal at the European level. Just to give you an idea, since the 1980s, the mobility strategy in Portugal has been dominated, led by road transport, and under road transport by the priority of investment in road infrastructure. So much so that the coverage, highway coverage density in Portugal puts Portugal in fifth place at the European level in terms of the territory's coverage by highways, which raises the question, strategic question, of how can we correct this enormous structural imbalance that exists. The railway network in the last 20 years was reduced by around one-third of its extension. The road network was multiplied by three, grew threefold in the last 20 years, which means that today railway transportation is residual, both in terms of goods transport and at a lesser level also in terms of passenger transport. So our party believes that one of its essential strategies is the priority that it needs to give to railway transport in the coming 10 years. So how can the European Commission lay out a set of support and co-funding mechanisms that can meet this priority, this investment priority? Particularly, how can we introduce positive discrimination in the financing of this railway infrastructure and in the financing of railway transport vehicles that can change the paradigm which the Commission announced, which is the road to decarbonization of mobility at or of movement at the European movement, increasing and reinforcing railway transport for goods and passengers, which in the long term should be leader of transport at the European level and within each European member state. We believe that the European Commission should assume a clearly positive discrimination position in terms of financing. The member from the Socialist Party mentioned the Juncker Plan, which initially was very much focused on the promotion of energy and transport infrastructure that would meet, to some extent, what the White Book, the Energy White Book, in the beginning of the year 2000, which would be a greater focus on alternative energy transport. So perhaps this could be a complement to a set of investments that would help meet these goals for both energy and transport. However, what we do see, and I'm sure that the Commissioner knows this better than myself, in the interoperability of the energy and transport network, we are in the beginning of the century. Such easy things like linking energy grids from the Iberian Peninsula to the rest of Europe, for example, has been something that has been successfully postponed due to national policies which prevent this interoperability. Commissioner, as I'm sure you know, the Sud Express train that leaves from Lisbon that goes to Paris must stop at the Spanish border because it does not have permission to cover the remaining 1,500 kilometers to Paris, which is a scandal in terms of the interoperability of European transport networks. And to conclude, there are several bureaucratic and administrative constraints which are not understandable and which, in my view, indicates the lack of integration of European transport policies, thus often preventing a number of investments which are possibly envisaged and the positive impact thereof. Pietro Matosuaj from the CDSPP party, Social Democratic.
We'll stay here with us.
The Member of Parliament just addressed you in English. Commissioner, I have four questions about present issues and future issues. The first one on present issues concerns the reprogramming of the present community framework. The Portuguese government announced that until the end of this month it would be reprogramming the community framework until 2020, and there is focus given to the transport sector, which we know from the government's perspective what it intends to do is to make changes, withdrawing funds that had been allocated to energy efficiency and allocating those and shifting those to railway transport, which in turn would have an impact on reducing polluting gases. And we also know that there are three projects in particular, the Cascais rail and then the Porto Lisbon linkage and then the Aveiro Salamanca linkage. And I would like to ask what is the situation of these three projects. And then another issue that you addressed, and very well so, because we know that yesterday you were at the visit to the line linking from the Sines Porto to Spain, which is very important to us, but there are two other lines which are very important in our view, which is the Aveiro Salamanca railway, but also the Leixões Porto railway. So I'd like to ask you, these were the three priorities that have been named. What are the views of the Commission with regards to these priorities? Another question about that was already addressed here, which is the energy and the interlinkages, the energy in energy terms. I know that you do not have the mandate or the energy portfolio, but the fact is that it is linked to interlinkages, and unfortunately the Iberian Peninsula is still an island in Europe that is separated from the rest of Europe by the Pyrenees. And as you very well know, Portugal and Spain can supply Europe, and even France can supply Europe with energy if some of these constraints are overcome. We also identified what the Commission said in its work program in 28, very positive views. But since this is linked also to transports, when do you see that the Commission will hold a high-level meeting on electrical linkages so that we may progress further in terms of this topic. And a fourth question about the next community framework. We know that on the 2nd of May, the Commission will be publishing the first document on the community framework, but for the time being, we are still discussing the options at the EU member state level, including Portugal. And I ask you, from the perspective of the transport sector, there was a question that was put here by Ricardo Pschiga, a question about the logic of the funds. So will we continue on the traditional track of funds distribution, or will we follow down the Juncker plan path? But I do have a question about the community framework. Europe is a social, political, and economic project, but it is also a project founded on values, and cohesion is one very important value. And we cannot think that we can build Europe without this dimension of cohesion between regions, between countries, and cohesion funds are fundamental. I need to highlight this because I do believe that all European Parliament parties at this Parliament cannot imagine the next community framework without cohesion funds. This, on the other hand, otherwise would be treason against the European project. All of this is very important to guarantee cohesion between European regions and European countries. We know that there is a significant part of the Commission that believes in this. The European Parliament has also said some things about this. I would like to hear your personal views on this. Thank you very much. And now give the floor to Miguel Tiago from the Portuguese Communist Party. On behalf of the PCP party, I would like to welcome the Commissioner to this Parliament. I wish you an excellent stay in Portugal. Many questions have been asked. I, before asking any question, would like to highlight something that you said at the beginning of your presentation on how Portugal has managed to overcome some of its difficulties from the perspective of economic growth. And it is precisely because we broke away from the impositions which the Commission largely imposed on us. So this has nothing, this growth has nothing to do with the European strategies that were imposed on Portugal. The fact is that we were tied down by a memorandum of understanding signed by different parties, one of which the European Commission. And only when it broke away, the country broke away from those ties, were we able to start growing. However, we have not yet overcome all of the hindrances yet. In addition to all of the questions, most of them very relevant, relevant questions that were asked here, I would like to add two or three questions. First, a question about the single European sky and how Commissioner can, or we don't believe that you can ensure, but what would be your comment about the all indications that suggest that the single sky will be an adjustment of the EU airspace to the whims and to the interests of air transport carriers? And to what extent that strategy will not be damaging to the interests of the workers. So everything seems to suggest that there will be a strong negative impact on the basic rights of workers, Portuguese and even European workers, namely the right to strike, to going on strike. About the community package, how well can the Commission ensure that the implementation of this package and the underlying strategy will not be damaging to railway transport safety? Also, in view of satisfying the whims of the transport companies, we have the private companies, and Portugal, we have the very bad example of Fertagos, which is the train that links northern Lisbon to the southern suburbs south of the river Tagus. To what extent can you guarantee the safety as a result of an effort of simplification, which everything seems to suggest will is in view of obtaining results? Economic sustainability, performance, how can you reconcile all of this with safety? And I have a last question also about the railway package. A question about workers' rights in this context. The liberalization of the sector. Well, the commissioner came to talk to us about funds and monies, available monies, but we need to ask what is tied, what comes tied to those funds, and what adjustments need to be made to the domestic market in order to receive those funds. That question also applies to the railway sector, which is a very important sector, as some of my colleagues have highlighted, and is in need of investment and not in need of policies which are very much focused on the profit of the companies managing the railway sector. Thank you very much. We have come to the end of this round of questions, and I give the floor to Commissioner Violeta Bulk, who has 15 minutes to reply. According to the available agenda that you gave to us, you have 15 minutes.
Thank you very much to all the questions raised. That just shows what an incredible diversity is present in transport, but also the connection between transport and the overall EU policy. Let me try to go step by step and reply to some of your comments or questions raised. But before I do that, because there were several different questions tapping into the new MFF, in the new financial mechanism between 2026, maybe I can just do first make an overall comment on that and introduce you to some of the fundamental elements that we will follow, and then I will go into the details of the rest of the questions. So, yes, indeed, in May 2nd, we plan to introduce the new MFF, which we hope to complete before the end of the mandate of this Commission for a couple of particular reasons. We were the Commission who were without a budget for 7 months, and we lost 7 months of our active role, and we do not want the same to happen to the next Commission. So the other one is that we've started many investment projects, and it would be a real damage done to the lack of continuation of investments on those projects. So that's another very strong driver why we want to continue and to get this MFF done as soon as possible. We learned a lot in the last period because, as you know, for the first time in the history of European Union, we introduced new financial tools. One of them, the most known one, is a Juncker's plan with very clear three pillars that were extremely important in order to get the investment cycle up to speed. One was the readjustment of regulatory frameworks to introduce more transparent and more predictable investment environment for investors. Second was to establish a pipeline of projects that were all first evaluated through the hubs with the free services of people who work in this hub, and then helping to shape up the projects in a way that were applicable for the investments, and then creation of a portal through which investors could access the projects that were ready for the investments. So that turned out to be really very important and very useful, so the third pillar could really start delivering. That was the guarantee scheme. European guarantee scheme to lower the risk of the projects in EU that we believed are strategically important but too risky for the classical loans or for investors to get engaged. So these were the three pillars, and all three pillars delivered. We were able to engage in the first 3 years more than 260 billion euros of additional investments through these innovative financial tools. So we plan to continue working with these tools also in the new period. Transport was benefiting from that as well, and we were able in 3 years to bring additional 23 plus billion euros of investments to European transport, which is a really good news, and having in mind that for the period 2014 and 2020, we had 23 billion euros, which we actually already gave and deployed. We deployed with applicable projects, and that altogether generates 50 billion euros of investments. So these 23 additional ones was a big push. If we bring on board also the loans that were given to transport, in 3 years we had 200 billion euros of investments. So what is that telling us? That in the new financial period we need to continue to keep this diversification in the different financial tools, meaning grants, meaning the guarantee schemes and the investments through the lowering the risk factors of projects. Third, with the so-called blending mechanisms, which we also, transport was a testing mode last year, where we proved that there is a room for yet another form of financing, which is blending, which means that you can use the European Guarantee Scheme, EFSI, to lower the risk, bring additional grants on the top to even further lower the risk of the project, and then top it up with institutional or private investors or commercial banks. And that turned out to be really useful for transport, because we dedicated 1 billion euros last year to that, and we got 2.6 oversubscription for that mechanism, and of course spread it all out, and it's already engaged. And so this will be yet another forum of investments that will be present in the next financial period. In addition to that, we also tested different dedicated financial instruments. For example, in transport, we launched the initiative for so-called clean buses that was immediately picked up by more than 70 municipalities, that they started to replace old polluting buses with green buses, being either electric, hydrogen, or LNG. So what I can say is that Portugal used really well grants, but has not used any other instrument so far for the investment in transport. So I would certainly invite you that you are a bit more bold in building capacities for financial instruments, and use especially the blending and the guarantee schemes, because there are many projects in transport that don't need grants. And because grants will be a very precious source of co-investments, use them for projects that are not attractive for the private investments, especially to bridge regional development gaps, to connect regions that are not attractive for the revenue in a revenue sense, use those grants for this kind of projects, and please use more flexible, more innovative tools for the projects that have revenue streams, that have attracted in the past these new financial tools and investors, and you could then be even in a more dynamic stage. Why is that important? Because every percent in that you increase the public investments over 4 years' time, you can, depending on how efficient you are in the deployment of projects, you can see the increase of GDP between 1.6 up to 2.4%. And that is a huge increase. So we will continue with that. So all these different financial tools will be there. I would like to be very clear that the cohesion money and the grants will stay. They will not disappear. But the need for investments to keep the Europe going and to keep Europe in the leading position globally, currently we're the strongest economy in the world. We have the strongest financial, especially out of Europe, financial impulses. That we are becoming a transparent and reliable partner for the investments. So we want to continue with that, but in order to do so, grants will not be enough. And we have new topics that are coming on board. Defense, we have the refugee issue, and we have Brexit. So if we want to continue with, as I said, with the development spirit, we will need to start using these new ways of financing as well. And please use this a bit more boldly from, in Portugal as well, especially in transport. So what are the new also elements that we are bringing besides these diversified financial investment tools? First, we are focusing on streamlining of the instruments. That is not centralizing. Streamlining means that what I witnessed yesterday in the field when we were witnessing the signature of the deployment of this new railway line. We need to better align regional and cohesion, regional and CEF funding. Why? Because if we build a certain railway track, this track needs to be connected to the corridor to fully manifest the benefits of EU. So, and we will make sure that this is happening in the future because it was too fragmented and the value that could be built on the top of it was not utilized. So one is streamlining. The second one is simplification. That will be a very strong guiding principle. To make sure that the project cycles can be done faster. The third one you mentioned as well, it's going to be building on synergies. Energy, transport, and digital, they have so much in common. And in the future, when we see decarbonization of transport and digitalization of transport, pushing for mobility services and bringing new types of services on board, we will have to work together better. Our investments will have to be much more aligned, and the future MFF will push us in this direction. Yeah? So I'm inviting you already today that we do that in a better way, because if transport wants to decarbonize and wants to use electrification of one of the decarbonizing strategies, we need to have infrastructure and access to energy available, possibly green energy. So this needs to be much better coordinated. So these are the core characteristics that you will see, and of course new budget lines, as I mentioned before. But because the Brexit outcome is still uncertain, of course we cannot speak about exact figures. So the first thing what we're going to do now is present the concepts and the models and the principles, and then by the end of the month of May, we will continue to work with each individual portfolio to see how this can evolve. But President Juncker was very clear, we will not touch youth and we will not touch Horizon 2020. But recently you could see that more and more member states and officials are raising the issue of transport connectivity, especially cross-border connectivity. And you mentioned the challenges that you have in energy and in transport with your neighboring countries. And in our 2014-2020 budget was already stressed very clearly that priority is railways, cross-border connectivity, and missing links. And we are, all our financial tools in this period have been geared towards these key priorities. That's why 73% of all investments that we are making in transport between 2014 and 2020 are railway related investments. And I'm glad that you picked up your obligations, because all the corridor commitments were signed in 2014 by all member states. And they're very clear mandates when and how they have to be delivered. And in order to make sure that all the investments are geared towards European standardization and interoperability and multimodality, the fourth railway package that was confirmed and is now valid, all the legislations are now official, in 2016, is replacing 11,000 local rules, 11,000 local rules with only 3,000 plus European-based rules. And all this alignment will be done by June 2019, next year. So in that case, the problems you have now with this missing 2 kilometers in between one and the other railway tracks will disappear, because we will have a standardized environment. And I'm inviting also, of course, Portugal to seriously consider as fast as possible to replace the Iberian standard with the European standard, because our goal is that by 2023, the entire European backbone, so all 9 corridors, have a unified ERTMS signaling system, which is European product, is our innovation, that's been now deployed in the phase of deployment throughout entire EU, that the trains will be able to run from Lisbon all the way to Helsinki without stopping at the border. Today, every train has to stop at every border and change the front engine. It's ridiculous. It's a waste of efficiency and time and financing. So the standardization is at a full scale right now, and we hope to really bring then railway as the core, most decarbonized mode, as the core of our transport backbone in Europe. I have only 20 seconds left.
You have time, you can.
I don't. I have a next meeting. But I will quickly go through a couple of key points that you asked me also for. I hope that this is clear, just this basic framework within which we're going to be operating. But let me now mention again, Portugal got a lot from Europe. And I'm glad that you're constantly looking your way forward, and it's good that you are relying on your own vision and hopefully share this with EU, that it can become part of European vision as well. But don't forget, 1.5 billion euros of grants you got either through corridor financing or through the cohesion financing, and this money came from the EU budget to Portugal. And it's good to see that it's being deployed. And please use the rest of the cohesion development money in 2018 and 2019. Because then if you don't engage it fully, it will be too late. But I'm glad that you used everything in your CEF money. You were very effective there. Even more, you got it even the additional funding from the general approach, from the general envelope. So there were also questions regarding priority projects and which project to finance. The one who is the most mature. We have a very strong governance model. We are developing and increasing and making it better and better that we can actually evaluate really well projects and then follow them through and see if they really lived up to the promise. And of course, those projects that are the most mature should receive the money as well. ports. This railway connectivity is one of the most important investments for ports. And through the Atlantic Corridor, the Portuguese ports can really become a very important ports also for the entire EU. The Panama traffic can be delivered then through the goods through the Portuguese ports and through the railways then be spread throughout the EU. And we've seen in Spain when they failed to address the need for railway connectivity to their ports and they really challenged the ports and jeopardized the competitiveness of the ports. So right now they are completely shifting their strategy and making sure that ports are well connected. So this is certainly an important move. I hope that will be used in the best possible way and also motivate that these missing links and cross-border links are really delivered in time. Social issues in transport, I have to say that, and maybe I shouldn't say that, but I will. I am a big innovator in my head, but I'm a socialist in my heart, because I do care about people, and every single portfolio, every single package that we put out, it always has nature and people as two dimensions. So decarbonization and people-focused issues are always addressed. I'm not saying we do it in the best possible way, but we am glad that we get engaged with unions and we try to find a way forward the best possible way. I heard a very hard criticism from a colleague at the end regarding the aviation. There is no way that we ever are interfering with the right of strike. And this is a subsidiarity issue anyway. We don't have any kind of power over that. But what we try to find a way, and we keep sitting together with controllers, with pilots, with all stakeholders in aviation, to see how can we ensure continuity of service. And we will sit at the table as long as it takes in order to find a way forward. That is a message. But we never, even in our wildest dreams, try to challenge the right to strike. I'm now a bit really late. So I think I at least touched briefly to all the questions that you raised. And if not, I'm more than happy to reply to you in writing in order to get to you everything that you're interested in, and of course take on board also your comments and consider them as part of the decision-making process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Commissioner Violeta Bulk, for this important hearing. Foi muito importante ouvir os objetivos do.
It was very important to listen to the goals of the present and the constraints and goals for the future for the coming financial framework. On behalf of the European Affairs Commission and on behalf of the follow-up commission for the pluriannual package and on behalf of the Transport Economy Commission, we thank you very much for meeting with us, and thank you also to the members of the three committees who met with the Commission and who quite positively addressed question about the Commissioner's portfolio. Commissioner, I wish you a good return home, and whenever you come back to Portugal, please find in this Parliament a house that is willing to listen to you. Thank you very much.